7654321.
You'll never have the sacred stone.
Oh, this you crazy mother.
Welcome, friends, to episode 67 of Color of Magic, your magic and gaming podcast where we talk about all types of, I guess, social issues that don't get ear time, and we're going to give it that time. I am your host, Daquan Watson, and as always, for 67 episodes, my main man, Brian Allen, is here with me. How you doing, dude?
Doing pretty good. I have returned.
Yeah, I should say, for the first time in a long time, happy Inauguration Day.
All right. Yeah, it was first time in about 4 years, roughly.
Yep. You know what's funny?
We thought we might get another president in the interim.
Well, maybe. I was just thinking, you know, yesterday was the last day that there had not been a woman, and particularly a black woman, as vice president in the United States. That's just kind of an interesting fact there.
Good times.
Yep. Before we get into business, though, we need to handle some business. And we tell everybody, if you want to support the show, go over to patreon.com/colorofmagic. We're working on a few things to really make it much better and be more consistent through 2021. And part of that is y'all helping us be able to do that, which is fantastic. And we have a new patron who has, by the way, the coolest name so far of our patrons, as Blade Behringer.
That is really cool.
That sounds like an old school wrestler.
Right? Or like a hard-boiled, you know, detective in a film noir or something.
Yeah, that'd be a good name.
You know who can fix this? Blade Behringer, that too.
Well, either way, thank you, Blade, for coming and joining our crew. Also, like I said, we're still working on getting those levels cleaned up, so you should be seeing those in a couple weeks. And here's a fun little thing we just started. We're going to be getting some artwork done in the month of February, and we're going to be making some tokens to match some of the Kaldheim stuff. I think we're going to do Warriors and Spirits that are going to be themed with me and good old Brian, and we're going to send those out to our highest patrons. We're just going to send those to you since your address is already in there. You'll just get those as soon as we receive them. Everybody else, we're going to try to make them cheap and affordable, so if y'all just want to get your hands on some, we'll give all the details as that gets closer. Just something to look forward to, just to kind of share the love and have some fun, just because we can.
I'm going to be a token.
I know. Isn't that fun?
It's not the first time in my career I think that's happened, but this time I'm excited about it.
Also, we do have a sponsor of the show, Cardsphere.com, which, by the way, if you are looking for Magic cards, especially right now, because it looks like the singles card market is going out of whack. People are coming for all collectible singles these days. It started with some content creators talking about Pokemon, then they've moved to sports cards and now into other card games. So we're seeing all kinds of stuff going up. And if you're looking for cards and you can't find them elsewhere, check out Cardsphere. A lot of times people just have stuff for sale over there. And you can sometimes even get it cheaper than you get it elsewhere. Or if you're just looking for a place to sell stuff and not deal with the hassles of like eBay. Like, that's another good thing about the site. And you can put money on and off using your PayPal account, which is super convenient. So you should check them out. They're good people and they support the show. They are Cardsphere.com. Well, that brings us to some fun parts of business. And boy, do we have some things to talk about. We are going to cover a lot of Kaldheim, but we do have some serious stuff to talk about first before we get to the Kaldheim stuff. And man, if there was ever a time for the crowds to be rowdy during the soapbox, it happened Monday night. So I do a later night stream. I'm usually on 9 p.m. to midnight Pacific. But sometime around, I want to say it was probably about 10:15, between 10:15 and 10:30, my time, we had a troll show up in the chat. And it's been a while since I've had a good racist troll. And you know what? It's still a while since I had a good racist troll. Because this person wasn't even trying. Like, they rolled in and just tried to say, like, basically, like, what's this black dude doing here? And, you know, just dumb blanket statement. Like, nothing even funny. Like, as I've told you before, my problem is I expect bad people to do bad things. I expect racists to show up. But at least try. Bring your A game. Bring me some good material to at least laugh at or something. Like, you didn't. I'm more insulted that you didn't even bring material for me. Like, that's where I'm at. But the cool part about it through the whole experience, by the way, at one point, well, let me just say this. Like, I appreciate my chat because over last year, they've kind of learned with me the best way to deal with these people. They have learned from me. And the best thing you can do is just don't give the trolls any attention. You know, like, this is going to be a bad analogy, but I tell people sometimes it's like that overly made up, really hot, like over the top model chick, and you don't talk about their looks. Right? I mean, it's kind of like that. Like, but this person comes into the chat and, you know, they're making these dumb. At one point, they're like, this John Boyega looking MF-er, right? Which, by the way,
I mean, as far as I know, isn't John Boyega considered to be, you know, relatively handsome? I don't know. He's in movies. Well,
yeah, he's a good looking dude. I don't look like him, but he's a good looking dude. It wasn't like I'd be insulted by that. So that was like a weird one because I'm like, what does that even mean?
Yeah, I mean, okay, they said Forrest Whitaker. Okay, yeah, we got to throw hands, but I mean.
Yeah, like, it's just weird. Like, no problem with that. I'm like, why was that the insult? Like, whatever. But, you know, we gave them enough rope to hang themselves, you know, and had my mods at that point. They just went, reported it, blocked them, banned them. Wasn't a big deal. But the chat, totally cool. Like, I ignored them. The chat ignored them. We rolled right through it. And then we talked about it for, like, just a couple minutes over in the Discord when I was done. And that was it. So it was really cool to see how well my chat has learned and was able to deal with that situation. It was really nice. But yeah, just having those trolls still roll through was just so ignorant. And then when I posted on Twitter just to let people know, like, hey, if you're going to be streaming tonight or tomorrow, just know that the trolls are out and about. A couple people did send me messages and a couple people responded just saying, yeah, they came through my chat too. And apparently a couple of the women got some stupid harassers as well. So it was just kind of a dumb overall night for a couple nights. But yeah, those people are out and about, still doing their thing. But this is what we talk about, you know, when people say, saying like, well, it's not that bad or things like, no, these things still happen. Like, these people just decide they're going to get their kicks out of going and just annoying people. I don't know why, but it's what they do. But anyway, we got through it. It's over. The people got banned. They didn't show up on Tuesday on my stream. They may have showed up somewhere else, but we still did our thing and everything was all good. So is what it is. But Brian, what did you learn last week?
This is a kind of a bizarre one, but the Pro Bowl, and for those of you that don't follow sports at all, the Pro Bowl is basically football's version of an all-star game. And since we, you know, since nobody wants to play any extra football games this year, the Pro Bowl, like the actual all-star game for the NFL, is going to be played in Madden NFL 21.
Yep. That's true.
That's more than a little crazy to me. I get it. Nobody wants another football game for another number of reasons. Just, the Pro Bowl has been a thing that's been kind of failing and flagging for well over a decade because now that we know, you know, all the physical tolls that football takes on you, it's hard to get anybody to get hyped. But hey, one more football game. It's basically meaningless. Who wants to play that? No one wants to play that.
Yeah, the other problem is, too, they've been trying to hold it in Hawaii, and like, they obviously don't want to put everybody to travel when they don't have to with their families and everything else. So it's just kind of like a weird time. Like, I don't even know what a good solution would be.
This is one where I think you could cancel it and nobody would complain. Sadly, most years you cancel the Pro Bowl, I don't know very many people who would complain, but especially this year. And I'm just waiting to see what kind of horrible glitches get exposed in Madden that make it virtually unwatchable. That's what happened last year, you know, when ESPN, desperate for content, tried to air the Madden – well, they did air the Madden championship, and the guy who won it was using his punter because he found a really good glitch, but it was terrible to watch on TV.
Yeah, they did say there's going to be some other stuff around it, like some other, I don't know, like award presentations and other things. So, I mean – I guess they're going to try to turn it into a real presentation, but we'll see. As for what I learned, mine's going to come with a content warning here. Any of you that follow me on social media, I posted this on Facebook and Twitter, I guess this morning, actually, Wednesday, when we're recording this. And Tuesday evening, before I went to sleep, I had found the court case. Oh, okay. Let me preface for those of you that don't know. Is there's the site called Parler, P-A-R-L-E-R. They are effectively the, how do we describe it? The Facebook equivalent for supremacist groups. Now, people went there under the guise of protecting their Second Amendment or their First Amendment rights, being able to have a place to go since they're getting booted off of all these other platforms where people actually give a damn. You know, if it's a safe home for conservatives and all that, right? But we all knew it was crap. But I also wasn't going to go log into Parler and find out, right? I didn't need that in my life. I didn't even want the app anywhere on my phone or my PC or anything. But then, because they got it booted off of everything, so the timeline here, so everybody knows, is they got booted off every available network. They got shunned by the mobile app stores, so nobody could even download it. And then Amazon, which owns one of the biggest networks for website hosting with their AWS, their Amazon Web Services, just pulled the plug on Parler and said, we're not even giving you access to anything. And the owner of Parler decided he was going to sue Amazon for I don't know what, but I believe it was just for some business-related thing, saying like they didn't have the rights to do what they did. Well, Amazon said, no, we had been telling you for 4 months all of the crap we saw on here, and you chose to do nothing about it. So then I got a little curious, and I wanted to see what evidence Amazon submitted to the court case. And oh boy, it is some, the only word I have is vile. I mean, literally. I mean, and I'm not saying this with like, I'm not saying this with hyperbole. I am saying it like the actual word vile. And here's the thing, like I get riled up, but like I rarely get like emotional to tears. But I will say there is some stuff I read in here that like my eyes welled up a little bit just at the thought of people I know were in support of this site and this effort. And what you, I don't like, man.
I know. I've looked at it too. And yeah, it is thoroughly disgusting.
Let me say this. Like Amazon said they could have put even more information in the exhibits, but they already had over 70 pages of stuff to submit. Hell, Exhibit E was 67 pages by itself.
Yeah.
And not only, like, and when you read through these, and this is another one, like, you might want to skip ahead, like, 3 to 5 minutes here. But this thing had, when you talk about, like, Nazi support, there's a couple people who signed off with just Heil Hitler. That's not insinuated. That's just somebody flat out putting it in text. There are people basically using us as a recruitment tool. There are people that were plotting and saying, like, hey, we need to pick a rallying point to start the revolution in DC. There are people taking shots with several different racial slurs at various people. There's websites and web links that come from, I don't want to use the term fake news because we all know what that entails, but like it's basically made up websites. Matter of fact, one of the titles, I think it's near the top of Exhibit E, was something like this college vaccine mandate only applies to white students, knowing damn well that this site is full of anti-vaxxers, full of racists.
Well, of course.
And that title, you know damn well is not true. But they knew people were going to get riled up, and immediately there's comments attached to it. Like, there's people going after transgender people and talking about killing them and offing them and referring to them as it constantly. Like, there's very loose usage of the see you next Tuesday when talking about women on the site. There's just, it's just constant. Like literally everywhere.
It's in there somewhere, basically.
Yeah, literally. I've told people, if you think of something negative that you would associate with this group that people try to tell you, no, isn't true. You're overthinking it. You're making stuff up. Like all of it is in there. And this is just one sampling that Amazon was like, cool, we'll just submit these. This should be enough. And they're like, no, we can go find more. If you need more, we've got more. Like, it's crazy. I mean, it's just pages and pages of that. Like, and there's shots at Stacey Abrams, at AOC, people still peddling the fake Obama birth certificate. And here's the thing. And it's not even just about people of color, mind you. Like, they're taking shots at just white people they don't agree with. Every politician. Hell, at one point, one person said, cool, we're going to get all politicians, and then we're getting the teachers next.
Yeah, it's like, who wants to declare war on the teachers? These a-holes, apparently.
Yeah. I mean, pictures with, like, politicians and Obama and stuff, like, in nooses, just like, it's insane. Like, I don't even, like, I just posted publicly, straight up. And I don't care if you're listening to this. I don't even care if you're a patron. You can get the hell out. Like, if you support anything or anyone going to this site or this service, I don't need you in my life. I don't need you in my orbit.
Right.
Like, for real. Like, I mean, it's, man, we have, here's how bad it is. Even with some of the stuff we have covered on this show and some of the things we have said and we have talked about, there are several of these I don't even feel good about reading to the public. Like, that's how bad some of this stuff is. Like, that is just bananas. So, yeah, just know this stuff is out there. And when we have these conversations about people feeling unsafe, people not knowing who they can trust, people not being able to take things at face value, you know, why people want to cut people out of their lives or whatever. Like, this is why. I mean, this was basically a haven for the worst of society in America.
And the owner can't be shocked because these are people who have been kicked off of every other social media platform.
That's the part I don't get about the case, though. Like, Amazon said straight up, like, no, we have been telling you for 4 months.
I know, old boy, yo, this is his business. He's already sold his soul to this devil. He's got to try to keep it in business. So I get, you know, he knew what he was signing up for.
Of course.
We owe Hillary Clinton all the apologies because this is a basket of deplorables. Don't apologize for Kyle.
But there's a document, which is maybe Exhibit C or B, I can't remember. But they basically said, like, no, here are all the emails we've sent back and forth telling you about this. So he didn't even get to act surprised. Like, Amazon kept it on record because they knew. Like, imagine how effed up you are that some of the biggest corporate companies that have let a lot of crap slide, that have supported a lot of awful people, looked at you and went, nah, we're out, dog.
Yeah.
Like, how much did you mess up? You know what I mean? Like, that's crazy. But all right, that's enough of that. I'm just saying it's out there if you want to see it. Shoot me a message on social media or on our Discord. If you want the links, I can get them to you. But I'm not going to have that attached to the show. Not nothing I'm going to share. I don't want people to accidentally click on a thing and not know what they're clicking on and then get shocked. Because there's some crazy stuff there. But there was another court case that has been going on for a couple months now that some people may or may not have been aware of. But basically, two of the writers of Dragonlance novels, history, world, if you want to call it that, Margaret Weis and Tracy Hickman, who many fantasy fans know very well, decided they were going to sue Wizards of the Coast for $10 million over the Dragonlance properties and stories. Depending on the version you hear of it, but there was basically some contention over some version of the new stories coming out using parts of the world or not, and different people being involved, and they believe they were entitled to more money. But then magically, we just found out just recently the suit was dropped. And then more new books are coming, and they're going to be involved in writing them. I don't know. What do you think about that, Brian?
It's corporate America. I'm suing you. You're suing me. Wait, we like each other again. It happens. It happens way more, I think, than people realize.
Yeah, it just seems funny. I don't know if there was a settlement or...
I'm sure there was, but behind the scenes, that something has been... I'm sure some money or... promises of money have changed hands, and they probably aren't gonna be able to talk about it because legal reasons. But
yeah, that was my guess. Love each other again. I was in the same boat you are, that like there wasn't a settlement listed, so it probably didn't happen. But there might have been like, hey, how about we give you a certain percentage of sales or something of the next book? If you believe you're entitled to more, then we'll just give you a bigger cut, and we call it good, and we all walk away happy, you know. Or something along those lines.
Yeah, but yeah, lawyers reach some kind of compromise, I'm sure, that we may never hear, or maybe we'll hear like, hey, all of a sudden we're going to have a whole Dragonlance theme set or something. I don't know.
And yeah, you know, to be honest, I don't fault either person, either party in this case, right? Like, Wizards is doing what they need to do to make money. The writers want to make sure they get paid for something they came up with. If they found a middle ground where everybody's happy, good for them. All parties involved. Fans get more Dragonlance stuff. The writers and creators still get paid. WotC lines their pockets. Cool. I'm good with it.
And I got to mention, you know, Daquan called his shot. Apparently, he's part of the Dragonlance lawsuit. Lisbeth Eden and her negative publicity was actually mentioned by the Dragonlance writers.
Yeah. And that's one of the things I mentioned, right? When people wanted to say, well, it shouldn't matter. I said, this is why it matters. Because anything they do as a company, somebody's going to dig that up. You know, they're going to say, oh, well, there's this negativity around this. Or, hey, they support people that do this thing. Right? Even though, like I said, at me as a person, I don't give a damn. I don't care. Hell, to be honest, I told y'all before, if I knew I could get paid doing it, shoot, I might be on there right now. But I get it. Right? It sucks, but that's still the way we view things in America and in business, and people will use that for leverage.
And I thought, if anybody complained, it'd be Walmart or Amazon or somebody. I would have never in a million years thought it would come up in a Dragonlance lawsuit. That's not where I expected to see it.
I'll guarantee you it's come up in other places. We just haven't heard about it. There's probably been phone calls or meetings or emails where it got brought up and people used it for leverage in one way or another.
Because while they mentioned it, I am having a hard time believing somebody went to buy a Dragonlance book like, oh, wait, yeah, but they supported Lisbeth Eden. I just can't buy this Dragonlance novel now. I just haven't. But, I mean, if one person did it, then they've got a complaint. Is the thing.
Oh, and that's the sad part. It literally has nothing to do with anything, but you can just toss that in there. Because of how it's perceived. Even though it really has nothing. And I agree with you. Like, nobody going to buy Dragonlance novels is going to give a damn about them supporting some streamer. They're just not. Like, just the way it is. They're not going to care.
If they even heard about it to begin with.
Hell, we've said it before, right? There's people who are like, I support gay people. But then they're still going to be in line to go get their Chick-fil-A sandwich. Right? Like, if they can't even do that, like, whatever. Like, people are going to care even less about a streamer being supported while they're buying some D&D stuff. But let's talk about the order of the week here, which is Kaldheim. Set comes out in about another week, a little over a week. We'll be seeing the streamer early access stuff a week from today. And I'm kind of curious, Brian, like, the whole set's out now, like, how do you just feel about it in general, now that you've seen all the cards and kind of have a better feel for what we're doing?
I mean, I think this is designed for me. There's a pretty stupid amount of tribal support in this set. So I'm probably happier than most people are going to be with this set. I don't know if it's competitive necessarily, but I personally don't care because I love to play tribal stuff.
Yeah, you know what's funny? Like, I actually enjoy the overall construction of the set from just like a design standpoint, playability. The funny thing I had an issue with, well, actually, we'll cover that later. Like, it just as a set, like, I do really like what they did. I like that they took some mythology and tried to turn it into something magic themed. They found enough ways to give it different flavors so you could build a tribal setup around it. And then there's a lot of stuff that, like, we don't necessarily know. It's like, is this card really good? Is it like a red herring? Is it just a fun thing to build around? Is it something that's only going to go in commander things? There's a lot to be figured out, and I kind of appreciate that. There's not, on its face, we don't really know what to do with a lot of the cards yet. And I like that, that it wasn't so much that was immediately obvious. Even with some of the early deck lists I've put together, I went back over the cards, and I'm like, you know, maybe I could play this in this thing. Let me just try this out, or whatever, and see how it works. But I'd rather have that than just like, oh, okay, well, we know we're going to play these 10 or 15 cards, and the rest are garbage. You know, I really like where we're at with this set. But that does lead me to my next question. What's your favorite or favorites cards in the set?
As y'all know, it is, despite y'all logic to the contrary, I'm still trying to run white weenie. So Resplendent Marshal, that one really jumped out to me.
Yeah, I like that card, man. I think that's a good choice. Where are you planning to use it, or what are you trying to do with it?
I don't even know yet. I mean, obviously some kind of, you know, white weenie thing, but I don't know yet what necessarily in this set is gonna party with it, or it might go to just into one of my existing white weenie decks, because again, it works with pretty much any tribe, looks like. So
yeah, and I think that's the weird part about that card is how it's worded, right? Because it's both when it enters or when it dies, but you have to exile a card from the graveyard first to get the bonus, but then the bonus only goes on other things that share a type with that creature you exiled, and for some reason doesn't put counters on itself. Like, these are very specific words for some reason on this card, and when I see that on a Magic card, I always try to think about, okay, what was R&D trying to dodge? Like, what happened in testing that they had to make this so specific?
Yeah, I mean, I could see it getting really huge if you let it put counters on itself. So I guess that probably was the thing, like, it was getting that. I guess especially for only 3 mana, maybe, and it flies, maybe it was just getting out of hand entirely too fast.
Maybe. I mean, that's possible. I don't know. Maybe if it was like you had the 2 mana angel, it died, you play Resplendent Marshal, remove that angel, you have a 4/4 flyer for 3, maybe that is too much.
Because, of course, every set, you know, white gets 5 more angel cards. Probably 5 is probably the lowest, depending on how many angel cards they print for white.
Yeah, I don't know. It's actually an interesting one. Another one I'm actually kind of enjoying, more for the discussion around it, is actually Goldspan Dragon. It's 3 colorless, red-red, for 4/4, flying haste. When it attacks or it's targeted, you make a treasure token. And then it has an ability that whenever you sacrifice a treasure, you get 2 mana instead of 1 mana. The funny thing about this card is, I don't think anybody knows what the hell to do with it. Like, when I look at people talk about it, everybody's like, oh, but you could maybe do this big thing, possibly. But, like, nobody even has, like, any semblance of a deck list. And, like, and I'm the dude who likes playing Gruul cards. I like playing big creatures. I like playing dragons. And I'm just looking at this and going, like, I don't even know. Like, this might be worse than the other, the 4/4 we get that, like, you can hold mana from phase to phase, and when it dies, you can spend red mana to deal damage. Like, probably worse than that, because it costs 5. Like, I feel like it's definitely worse than Terror of the Peaks. But the other side of that is there a world where I could build a dwarf dragon deck that even cares about treasure, right? Then I could really go off with this card, and it could be awesome. Or if I'm playing something with dwarves and treasure, maybe I can play this a turn sooner, maybe 2, depending on how much treasure I create. And then when I attack, I get a mana back because it's generating treasure. Technically, I get 2, because I can crack the treasure while it's on the table. Like, that's what I'm saying. It seems like you do these awesome things, but I can't figure out a scenario where that actually happens, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it absolutely does. And I think this is the first time, you know, we've actually had, I won't say, well, yeah, I guess one of the same cards, because I'm later in the list. I'm talking about some dwarves. So, yeah, I think this is the first time we've picked one of the same cards. And we've done this, what, at least 5 or 6 times now?
Yeah, at least. So, yeah, that's one that really kind of, like, gets my attention. But that's what I'm saying. Like, that's why I like this set. Because there are cards like that that you'll talk to people and they'll be like, no, this is just infinitely worse than all the other dragons that are available. And then you'll talk to them.
But it's going to be fun to play with.
Well, yeah. The thing is, though, you'll talk to the other group of people and they're like, oh, no, this card's busted. And I'm like, wait, really? And then they'll explain a scenario to me and I'm like, I don't know. Maybe in Magic Christmas Land it might be. I have no idea. Magic Christmas Land allows us to do some crazy things. So I don't know. We got to dream big sometimes.
And a lot of times we remember the one time the combo went off as opposed to the 50 times where it failed horribly.
Well, yeah, that's exactly it, right? You live for those moments, right? And that's why I like these cards, because you can have those over-the-top fun moments and just enjoy it, right? Even if that only happens every 5 or 6 games, you're still okay with it, right? People are going to feel...
If you're a content creator and you were recording while that thing happened, it can literally monetize your channel if it's crazy enough.
Oh, for sure. Totally. Let's talk about what card have you seen in the set that is what I'll call the most dreaded. What are you going to hate seeing? And there's probably a couple of them, but you know, we'll start with your first one.
Well, that actually was where I was talking about dwarves and treasure. Literally, I was thinking the same thing you were just talking about, where I feel like there's probably something busted here, but I don't know that I'm a good enough mathematician to figure out what the thing is. With the treasure and, you know, going and searching for dragons and artifacts, like, I think it's part of what bothers me is there's probably something here, and somebody else with that, again, is way better at math or better at putting combos together is going to figure it out before I do, and I won't want to play the deck at that point because I'm not the one that figured out the crazy thing.
You know, it's kind of funny you say that, because my mind is also in a sense of around a couple of cards. The first one for me is Valky, God of Lies, which has the ability to copy stuff in the graveyard, or the backside is just a big Tybalt. Like, this is the type of card that seems like it could do just some really powerful things if you can set up the right scenarios. Yeah, but I mean, the card's also good. It has like a discard effect when it comes into play. Each opponent exiles a creature card from their hand. Like, you can copy things that have been exiled. The backside lets you do a ton of stuff with Tybalt, especially in older formats, because with Cascade, the way it works is you get to the card and you can choose which side of the card to play for free. So you can play the backside, which costs like 7 or 8 for free, you know, through Cascade, which is crazy. That feels like it could be pretty nuts. Enough that I think, because double face cards with cost on both sides haven't really existed, so I could see them changing the rule for Cascade as far as that's concerned. You know, I wouldn't be surprised if we see an update before the end of this year. But then the other one is a card that I believe it's Cosima, God of the Voyage. It's 2 colorless and a blue, 2/4. At the beginning of your upkeep, this is a weird card, by the way. So beginning of your upkeep, you may exile Cosima. If you do exile it, it gains the ability that whenever a land enters the battlefield under your control, if that card is exiled, you may put a voyage counter on Cosima. If you don't put a counter on Cosima, you return it to the battlefield with +1/+1 counters on it equal to the number of voyage counters, and you draw that many cards. That's a lot going on.
I've seen that card on lists where it's going to be the most overrated card, or also lists where people are like, no, you don't understand how good this card is. It's going to be, the true answer is probably somewhere in the middle.
Yeah, I feel like, though, if you were to figure it out, like, and I don't know what that is. Maybe there's some world where you play this with some green cards that are putting multiple lands into play. So like Cosima's Exiled, you go search for two or three lands into play. Cosima gets three counters, comes back into play as a 5/7, and you get three cards that next turn. Like, I don't know. Like, it feels like it could be like, I think from the issue of sitting on the other side of the table from this card, like, you have to really decide how much do you need to kill it. Like, what's the opponent doing? How often is it coming into play? I just feel like there's just so much going on there.
If, you know, 3 or 4 months from now, you tell me that something has happened where this card has had to be, if not banned, at least changed, I'd believe it. Or if you tell me this card is just, you know, sitting in binders waiting for a combo, I would believe that outcome also. I don't know which one is more likely to happen yet.
Well, the other thing is it also has a good vehicle on the backside. The backside is a colorless and a blue for a 3/3. Whenever vehicle you control deals damage to a player, that player exiles that many cards from the top of their library. And then you may play lands from among those cards for as long as they remain exiled. So basically you mill your opponent, but they go to exile instead of graveyard for however much damage you deal with the vehicle, which in this case would be a 3. And then you can play lands from there that are exiled. Like, even the backside's good. So this card has to see some play. I have a feeling I'm going to get tired of seeing this card on some level.
I remember one of the Magic memes I saw where people were like, you know, pick one of these two cards. Which one's going to break the format? One was Questing Beast, which we talk about all the time. Like, every time it comes into play, I feel like every time it takes an action, I feel like I've missed one of the keywords. The other one was Growth Spiral. And I think at the beginning, we would have all said Questing Beast as the thing is busted, and we'd have all been wrong.
Yeah, I mean, that's how it is sometimes, right? It's the other issue, too, is just we don't know what the format's going to look like, right? There may be a world where doing Cosima stuff might be the best thing. It could also be a world where the decks are so aggressive that you don't have time to do Cosima stuff. You know, like either of those is very possible. So I don't know. But that's a card that's just going to, I feel, is going to cause headaches. Especially like timing issues, once we get back to playing paper Magic again, you know, maybe around summertime, keeping track of all that's just going to be a mess. All right, so all that being said, like, there's some cards we like, there's some cards we're afraid of or don't want to deal with. What are some cards that, like, you just think from this set you're going to see a lot of?
I think of Vorinclex Monstrous Raider, just because we know green is already really strong. It's another kind of looks like stupidly large and pretty good creature for green.
That's not a bad one. My only concern with Vorinclex is that Gargaroth still exists.
Yeah.
I think one of the ones I was looking at that's probably going to end up being pretty well played is going to be Sigrid, Godfavored. It's a 3-mana 2/2. It has flash, first strike, protection from gods, which will probably be relevant. And when it enters the battlefield, it exiles up to one target attacking or blocking creature until that card leaves play. Like, I can just see so many decks playing this. And it happens to be a human warrior, by the way, on top of every. So two relevant creature types, which could be a big deal. Is there anything else, like, you think people are going to play a bunch of?
I have a tribal bias, but it looks like the elves got a lot of Herald, King of Skimfar looks really good. First of all, it's a card, you know, that searches for other cards. Those usually end up being relevant in some form.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Looks like elves got really probably 9 or 10 cards that really could be pretty good.
Yeah, I think it's going to take people a while to find, like, the best elf build. But I think there probably is a good one out there.
And then the other thing is, like, will it end up being better than what we're currently doing with green? Which is, like, you know, play all the stupid creatures. You know, that's going to be, I think, the thing that may hold it back is just, hey, you just could be throwing down Gargaroth first and winning.
Yeah, that's kind of part of the question, right? Like, you could play all these elves. But, like, you probably aren't going to play mono green elves. Because I can't. At least right now, I don't see a world where mono green elves is going to be better than either just doing big aggro green things or doing big green food things. I think either of those is going to be better than just whatever you're going to do with elves. But if you find a way to make elves work, you know, with the black cards and the removal and other stuff they're going to be able to do, like, maybe? I don't know. Maybe? I think Toski, Bearer of Secrets, is going to be a card we're going to see people play even when they don't need to be playing it. It's 3 colorless and a green for a 1-1. Can't be countered. Indestructible. Has to attack each turn of Fable. But whenever a creature you control deals combat damage to a player, you get to draw a card.
Because green needed more card draw.
That's true. It really didn't need more card draw. But it's really good upside. But it doesn't necessarily do anything. You know what I mean? Like, it's a 1-1. It's got a breakthrough. Like, it needs some help from its pals to really do something. But it's also not bad if it's, like, the thing left on the table.
I mean, it's in a color where it's going to get a lot of help from its pals, unless something big happens to the metagame that we're not aware of yet. Green is kind of stupid right now.
Yeah, I could see just a lot of builds, though, where people are going to say, like, well, I'm playing green. Let me just toss 2 of these in there. Right? The reality is, I think the best place, not to say, like, if you're already playing just a green aggro deck, then, like, sure, go for it. There's a chance you get a bunch of free cards. But I think this card could have a really sweet spot when you're talking about playing against something like Dimir Control, because it can't be countered. A lot of the removal is spot removal, except for, like, Extinction Event. So this could really be a great sideboard card in those scenarios. Like, you bring this in, it's like, okay, well, I'm just going to hit you every turn, and I'm going to get a card. And the only thing they're going to be able to do otherwise is play one of the man lands to block it. But since it's indestructible, it doesn't kill it. But you're also tying up like 4 or 5 of their mana every turn.
So it's how, like, many times do you go against a control deck and you got them down to 3 or 2, and then they wipe everything and come back?
Yeah. So I mean, I think this has a home. I just think for the first couple of weeks, we're going to see way more of it than we need to see. One of the other cards that I've actually started putting into list myself, which leads me to believe we're going to keep seeing a lot of it, is Usher of the Fallen. It's a 2-1 for 1 white mana, and it has Boast. Whenever you attack, you can trigger Boast. Colorless and a white, create a 1-1 white human warrior creature token. And it's not even so much because of the Boast itself, but I think it's more just that it's a really good quality 2-1 for 1, which we don't really get anymore. I mean, we have the 2-1 knight that when it dies puts a counter on other knights, which is okay, but you have to be kind of in a very specific deck to use it. And then we have the, like, 2-2 red creature, whatever that was. I can't remember the name of it, but, like, whenever it has haste and whenever it attacks and deals damage to your opponent, you have to return a land to your hand or whatever. And that thing never really made it, you know, so everything else is just 1 power, 1 drops, I believe. So it's really cool to have this available. And not only that, it's in white. You know, for as much as people have been saying, like, well, white isn't getting a whole lot, and white's not getting... White got several things in this set. Like, white really got hooked up pretty well, I think.
And more cleric support for a deck that already was, you know, I think at least, you know, mid-tier.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I definitely have already been... matter of fact, I believe my second deck list that's going out on my channel is going to be a cleric list. So... definitely support there. So yeah, lots of just good stuff in general.
Okay, it's probably not. Well, I don't think it's A tier, but I mean, some of those clerics, if they're not answered pretty fast, they just steamroll.
Oh yeah, I've won many games just going like turn 2 cleric of lifespan, turn 3 cleric of lifespan, and then after that, you just have creatures growing at a dumb rate, and your opponent can't keep up. Yeah, and sometimes game's over in 5 turns. So yeah, there's definitely some stuff to build around here. It's just hard to pick. You know, I've had people saying, like, well, what do you think everybody's going to build? Or what does the build of this look like? Like, man, I don't know. Like, we're literally just guessing. Like, there's so many, like, this is what I love about the set, though. There's so many cards doing things that we don't have a true comparative for, right? We're just going like, well, this is kind of like this other card, but it also works differently here. Or it's got this different casting cost, so it really makes a big difference. Right. So we're having to reevaluate everything completely. And I dig that. I'd rather it be that way than the other way.
One of my friends that's kind of binge listening to the podcast, hi, John, when you get to this point, he's telling me about how, you know, it's funny to hear us talk about things, you know, whether it's magic related things or the pandemic where we're so naive. We're like, yeah, this Uncle Car, what do you think? Yeah, thing? I don't know if it's going to be just things like that. And then, you know, 2 or 3 months later.
Yeah. I mean, that happens. And a lot of it, too, is like I said, it's also not understanding how powerful some even very simple set of words can be. Not understanding how they interact with other cards in the set yet. And to some extent, what does the metagame even end up looking like? Because like we said earlier, there's worlds where certain builds, like we're saying about Kasima, right? Like, there is an environment where I could see Kasima being very good. But if everybody's on aggro elves, aggro clerics, aggro red, you know, whatever, you're not going to get a lot of time to do Kasima tricks. So then that card just becomes terrible. But if it becomes a lot of, like, I don't know, some versions of mill, some control decks, maybe some mid-rangey teamer ramp stuff, whatever, then you don't have time. And then that really changes things. But to kind of wrap all this up, now that we've, you know, we've talked about some different cards we like or don't like, we've kind of talked about what we like about the set. What would you say, I guess everything included from top to bottom, from when we first heard about it to now, what would you say are some things that are missing or that you would have wanted to see that aren't there?
I mean, there's probably something, because, you know, I'm still trying to figure out the party deck, and I know we're getting a Dungeons & Dragons set, so there's nothing that really jumps out, like, okay, this specifically picks up the mechanic. There's nothing that jumps out specifically, hey, this thing goes in your party deck, probably, because I don't know how many people even still have party decks.
That's fair. Yeah, for me, there was a couple of things. You know, the first for me was just the marketing that was kind of disassociated from the set, right? I think I mentioned it last week, that there was this heavy, like, metal component, and we kept being fed, like, these heavy metal bands and this thing. And then, like, the set's, though good, and I like the artwork a lot, it still just looks like a normal Magic set. You know what I mean? I didn't get the feel that there was just, like, this metal world, which is sort of what I felt like I was being marketed, that there was going to be, I don't know, like, giant metal structures that they built their castles out of or something. Like, I don't know. But I didn't really get that vibe. But, like, if you just showed me random 10 cards from the set, I wouldn't be able to say that this is a metal-based world. Not like when I look at, like, Phyrexian cards, there's a lot of metal in the artwork, right? And I can tell you from looking at the backgrounds and stuff. I didn't necessarily get that from this set. And then the other downside for me was how many people that previewed cards didn't do something to tie into the whole metal theme. I was just like, man, like, come on. I actually reached out to a couple people, and I was like, hey, if you haven't done your preview thing, I'll straight up put Kiss makeup on to do a preview, right? Like, if you need something, you know, let me know. I'll hook it up. Just because, like, if you're going to do it, then just go in on it. Sell out on it. You know what I mean?
Now, how many people looked at you with blank stares when you mentioned Kiss was probably my next question.
I didn't get that. So that part was good. other than that, you know, I don't feel like too much was missing, except for maybe, like I said, I would like to have seen one card in each color to, I don't even know if punish, but just, like, hinder snow stuff would have been nice. Because we did get the white one, but it would have been nice that, like, maybe you get a green one that, like, if your opponent controls at least 3 snow permanents, this creature has +1 and trample or something, you know, whatever, anything like that. Like, you know, maybe the black one is a 4 mana spell that kills a creature, but if your opponent controls some number of snow permanents, it costs 2 or something, right? Like, anything like that would have been nice, just to put some type of hindrance on the snow mechanic. But there's a lot of really insanely good snow cards. Now, I don't know how they come together, or maybe you're just playing, like, snow lands, so you could use a couple of them and you just put them in the appropriate deck, and that's fine, but I just hope snow isn't so overwhelmingly good, because we already see people putting deck lists together, and they're just including a bunch of snow basics, because why not, right? There's a chance it could be relevant that I need to do something with these, which just feels silly.
I actually thought of one. Now that we've talked about it for a few minutes here.
Well, what'd you have?
Is there a Ragnarok card? Did I miss it if there is one?
That's a good question. No, I don't think so. Because there's like the World Tree thing.
And... of course, I don't know how long are we, or how many Kaldheim sets are we doing? I'm assuming this is like a part of a block, so.
No, this is the one for now.
Oh, I mean, well, yeah. Then, okay, yeah, if there's.
We may come back to it in like 5 years or whatever, but.
Could definitely, you know, Norse mythology, Ragnarok, obviously the big name. Hey, when the end of the world as we know it.
Oh, there was one more thing that did bother me, at least from the construction of the set. There was one thing. And it's that runes really didn't matter. I kept waiting for something to come out because we have two different cards that reference runes. And I was like, oh, okay, well, cool. Let's see what the runes are about when they come out. And there's just five of them. But they're just not very impactful. And I hope I'm wrong about this, but like they have a rare that searches out a rune, and then they have a rare crown that you can attach a rune to and give a bonus. But they're just one in each color. One of them gives lifelink, one of them gives flying, one of them gives death touch, one gives +1/+0 on haste, one gives +1/+1 on trample. It's kind of, I mean, they replace themselves when you play them because you draw a card, but that's about it. I mean, they're not anything to write home about, right? Like, I couldn't even think of a deck. Maybe the green one, possibly, but yeah, I didn't really get it. I was expecting there to be like at least 10 runes, maybe like a common one and an uncommon one in each color that does something. But like, yeah, like, fortunately, they only took up 5 slots. So, you know, the fact that they're a little disappointing, but they only take up the uncommon slot and there's only 5. It's like, all right, that's fine, I guess. But they just don't feel like they do anything. So now you have 2 other rares. I think it's the Runeforge Champion is a white card, 2/3, that can search them out. And then there's an artifact. I don't know why I can't remember the name of it. Runed Crown, actually, is just what it's called. And that's it. I don't even think there's anything else that references runes. So it's just kind of like a weird thing to have tossed in the set. I would have rather those 7 cards just not been in there and gotten 7 other things that we might play with, you know, but, and they're probably okay for draft and for limited play, which is fine. I'm not going to hate them. Like, it's 5 uncommon slots. No big deal. But having a rare and an uncommon that, because it turns out the Rune Crown's uncommon. But having a rare and uncommon that reference runes, and then the runes themselves don't do anything, it's kind of a letdown.
I can see that.
But otherwise, yeah, I like the sagas. I like a lot of the multicolor rares that they put in the set. I like that. Like, I'm with you. I think the tribal stuff's very cool. So yeah, credit to WotC. Like, the overall, from a set construction standpoint, I think this should be a lot of fun here in the coming days.
Yeah, I'm definitely excited to dive into it.
Yeah, I'm gonna be all about it. I've already started some work toward it, but yeah, I'm definitely enjoying it so far. But you hear the dishes, so it's time for us to kick back and have just a good conversation around the dinner table. And since you brought this topic up, Brian, because it's something I think we've both seen mentioned a few times in the last few months, I'll let you start, but the subject here is really just how we feel about having inherently evil races in various forms of fantasy, well, just fantasy culture, I will say.
Yeah. It was, you know, I think the Dragonlance thing is kind of one of the things, you know, that brought it up again, just talking about how, especially in, well, as you say, in fantasy, in Dungeons and Dragons, and these type of properties, there is inevitably some race. For example, orcs are, you know, usually dark-skinned. They tend to be violent, not that bright. And again, somebody is, you know, I'm a black kid that grew up reading Lord of the Rings and then watching the movies and playing these various card games and didn't connect any of that till somebody mentioned it to me. I was like, oh my God, yeah, you're right. Now that you, yeah, I see it. And there's probably 30 races like that. Somebody showed me the description of what is essentially is the race that's obviously patterned after the Romani, where I think even in the one of the source books description, it says something along the lines of, you know, they may seem lazy, but they're actually very smart, especially when money is involved. Like, oh my God. And just how did this ever see print?
Yeah. And it makes me wonder sometimes if the people putting those together are, I don't even think they're doing it purposely.
I don't feel like they are, but it's just, they've never thought about it because it's quote unquote fictional characters.
Yeah. And I wonder if it's just like, this is just like, oh, what they naturally associate with being these things for better or worse. So they just turn it into a character. And I think that's part of the problem that like we have, some of them haven't had that conversation to even address some of that. To say like, oh, you're right, that is kind of messed up. Or, oh, yeah, I do see where that influence comes from. I should probably change that. Because, like, I mean, it's kind of a weird thing. Like, even going back to, I guess, pre-third edition D&D, or pre-fourth edition, I guess, they had a point where, I guess, like, even goblins didn't even have, like, true wizards or whatever, if I remember right. And it was just, like, weird to say, like, well, how can one race just, like, not do a thing? Right? Because in my head, I'm like, well, even goblins might have, like, a weird goblin shaman that he happens to know how to make fire and that impresses all the other goblins or something, right? Like, whatever it is. And it makes me wonder just, like, why that is a thing people just accepted when they were creating stories and just saying, like, well, nope. Nobody from this group or this race can do this thing. Now, I get it if it's tied to, like, I don't know, some fantastical history or something or whatever and, you know, blah, blah, blah. But, like, if it's just they just are or just aren't, it's always – that feels kind of lazy to me.
Yeah. And I've heard stories about people, you know, using their D&D alignments to be racist or mean to other players, you know, or like, oh, it's okay. They're a quote-unquote – goblin, I'm supposed to be rude to.
Yeah, that's come up before too. And you know, and what's funny is I tried to use my games to teach some of those lessons. I do remember an X-Crawl game I ran, which was the longest. X-Crawl was basically a third edition D&D variant where the character, like the national pastime was dungeon crawling. So the characters are playing basically dungeon crawling celebrities. You know, and at one point, they decided they were going to take out some of these other, like, passive goblins or whatever. And one of the characters was supposed to be lawful good. And I kind of asked him, like, are you sure you want to do this? Like, they're basically all the warriors, the males, wherever, they're on a raiding party. They're gone. This is just, like, women and children. And you want to go through and just help slaughter this village. Like, okay, cool. Like, I gave you an out.
Want to be the good characters? Want to slaughter the village?
Yeah, I gave you the opportunity. All right. And then I just used that as a point when later on he tried to use his power or get a favor from his god. And they were just like, no response. Right? It's just like, I don't understand. You know, and as a person, he wasn't getting it. He was just saying like, well, I don't, man, something must be wrong, or something must be cursed that I have on or whatever. And like, and then it took him a while to connect the dots and go like, oh yeah, that was kind of messed up, huh? And I was like, yeah, it was kind of messed up. Like, you just went around some passive people and just tried to slaughter some folks. Like, but I think sometimes, and I don't say like the DM should be like, you know, teaching lessons, but I think if you're aware, you can navigate your stories in a way that you can use it as an opportunity. And I think a lot of people miss that sometimes.
That's happened in history. Like, hey, look, we've murdered all the infidels. Why have we not been blessed? Hello, you just murdered a bunch of people.
Yeah, pretty much.
And you're wondering why blessings from whatever heaven you choose to believe in are not falling down upon you.
Yeah, it's a lot that same thing. Yeah, and I coming back to your original point, you know, when you have a race like the orcs that you've given basically the traits of a particular human class or being and just made it fantastical, that does, I don't think it necessarily does like direct damage to that group, but I think it does subversive damage. That like you make people okay with treating that person or that class of people or whatever a certain way. And subconsciously, it becomes okay, even without them thinking about it. And I think that's the danger there. And don't get me wrong, I'm not saying you can't have dark-skinned races, this, that, and the other, but it's kind of like why, as a black person, it was so cool to see the Black Panther movie, right? It wasn't like, oh, well, you're in Africa, so it's all Serengeti and lions or whatever. It was like, no, there were some people who worked the field and trained the rhinos, and there were some people in the lab, and then you had your, like, the kings and the queens, and, you know, like, so there were, you were, like, full functioning society, just as a whole, they tend to be darker skin. That's not something you got very often in movies. You know, so that was just, like, a cool thing to say, like, see, you can have these people that are dark-skinned, and some of them are technologically savvy, some know about agriculture, some are trained warriors. You know, like, you can have a little bit of everything. And I think it just changed that narrative just a little bit to get people to go like, man, this was really cool.
Because and there are situations where people go the other way, and it's, you know, what they, I guess you would call, you know, racism that they mean to be positive, where it's a Asian theme setting and every character somehow is a black belt martial arts, just everywhere in the whole town, which is completely unrealistic.
Yeah, that's a little tough too, because I can also see like the intent of like, well, we're going to do this, we're going to make every character just awesome at this thing. And it was just like, yeah, but like, what if some of them just want to be normal people? Like, what if some of them just want to be like investigators, or, you know, they're the curators of the libraries or whatever, right? Like, is there no role for those people doing that? You know, it's kind of the question. And I think it opens the doors to just more thinking. You know, when, even when we come back to talking about like the Black Panther, right? When it was interesting to see for the next 2 years, everybody, like little kids wanting to be the Black Panther for Halloween.
Right.
Right. Like it like you made it to where it was cool to want to be the black character. Same thing with Miles Morales. Like I've seen pictures of people like little black kids wanted to be Spider-Man for the first time. Right. That's not something you got before. But when you put people, whether they're real races or fantastical races, into certain boxes, subconsciously those narratives start becoming like, well, you know, I guess black people are good at physical things.
Yeah.
You know, like, you know, that sort of becomes the narrative, right? Whether it's true or not. And don't get me wrong, like, I mean, I ran track, I ran against some Nigerians and stuff. Like, I've seen how some of them can run, but it's also part of their culture there.
I learned very early in my life that as a football player, I made an excellent writer, or you know, any sport, really. I was way better at writing about it than I was at playing any of them.
But yeah, that also comes back to why it's important for us to both build up people and build up stories that break the norm, right? So people accept that as being the norm, and you don't have to fight so hard to make those stories heard. Like, you know, even you doing just what you're doing, I said, being a journalist, right? You working around people as a black person, being a journalist in an office where there may not have been very many black people, right? Opens up the door for the next person. So they go, yeah, you know what? We gave this other dude a chance and he was pretty good. Why don't we give this other person a chance? But without that happening, or somebody saying like, hey, why are we not looking at more people this way?
Yeah.
You know, I mentioned it, I think I mentioned a couple episodes ago. We're talking about like Facebook saying like, hey, we notice there's not a lot of black content creators in the online gaming and streaming platforms. We're going to dedicate some money to making sure there's more black people in this space. And part of that is people going like, oh, why? Why are you putting money aside for that? But part of it is like, you aren't going to get more people doing it until you open the door and make it okay and make examples and say like, see, these people are good too, and have them build up their fan base or whatever, so the next person comes along and can do it. So sometimes you do have to be blatant about it because you're trying to change years, decades, centuries in some cases. When you're talking about like fantasy writing and stuff, you know, you're trying to change a whole perception of a thing, because people just fall back on saying like, well, you know, D&D, well, Tolkien, well, whatever, right? Sure, okay, that's one person's perspective or one person's creative, but like, why can't the next thing be different?
Yeah, we shouldn't be, you know, married to something just because this particular author didn't have any black friends or, you know, or crazy.
Well, yeah, and the other reality is too, some of these things, some of these concepts were created in a time where, I mean, people don't like to hear it, but like, we were considered 2/3 of a person.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, that's just the reality of it, right? And some of these things were written at a time where we couldn't even all sit down next to each other at a McDonald's.
So many times we do things because it's that's just the way we've always done them, you know?
Yeah.
I've written things and probably done that to some, you know, written things because, hey, that's the way I read it in the X-Men comics. Doesn't mean I had to do it that way, but that was my influence.
Yeah, that bugged me too. I was thinking about that earlier. Like, even the X-Men, I felt was like, all right, this is Marvel's way of writing characters to say, this is how we're going to deal with the concept of racism and make it okay for people. Which, good for them, right? Needed to be done at the time they were coming out. But then I thought about it, like, that group didn't even really have colored people in it. Like, the thing you're trying to bring to the forefront and make an issue, and you're making this, like, allegorical comparison or whatever, you didn't even put people of color in the group.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, like, even that, when somebody was making an effort to do a thing and saying, okay, these are going to represent people that are different, these are going to be the people trying to persecute these people. And obviously, if you're reading between the lines, you could see what they're talking about. But you didn't even take the effort to be like, oh, there's like Storm came later and we had Storm as part of the group, and that was cool. But like, I was thinking about that, looking at the initial group, and I'm like, why wasn't there like a larger number of people of color in that group to help push the narrative of what you're trying to, the story you're trying to get across?
And by larger, we mean any.
Well, yeah, at the time, for sure. But yeah, all of this, like, putting a nice bow on all this, like, it's really all about, if you're going to go forward writing a thing, challenge the norms. You know, make characters that you haven't read before. Give characters motivations that you haven't seen in a story before, in a movie. You know, give them those opportunities. Because I think you'd be surprised both with yourself and from what your readers may actually take away from that. Brian, why don't you tell where they can find you on social media when you're not doing the podcast?
Right. I am DL Caesar on Twitch, YouTube, Twitter, and Instagram. And our family YouTube channel is Alan's Ever After.
And you can always find me everywhere at Power Dragon, PowerDragn, on most major platforms, streaming over on Twitch and YouTube videos every day. And if you just want a good crazy follow, come follow me over on Twitter too. But as always, wherever you are listening, whenever you're listening, good morning, good afternoon, good evening, and good night. And while we're still kind of waiting around for our vaccines, remember to wear your mask, wash your hands, stay away from other humans, because yes, they're still icky with the COVID. And help us get back to gaming and gathering sooner rather than later.
If you'd like to further support Color of Magic, you can find us at our website at colorofmtg.com. We also have a Patreon if you'd like to donate. Other patreon.com/colorofmagic. You can also find us on Facebook under Color of Magic. And if you want to follow us along at Twitter, you can find us there at Color of MTG. And as always, please share the podcast around to your friends, your network, people you think might enjoy it, because every little bit helps as we're trying to increase our user base.